about 15 men, an officer attached to each unit.
Mm-hmm.
And they were backed up by the workshops, by the brigade workshops, which
were
divisional troops.
Right. But you were at division
headquarters. I was at divisional headquarters.
Divisional headquarters at this time. Now, didn't Career R come in at this point and change over?
General Career? Well, no, that was later on.
It was much later on, yeah.
Yes, sure, that was after Sicily. This was still in England, you see.
Yeah, no, I know that. I'm trying to think, when did, Perks went back, left at this point, is that correct?
Hmm?
Didn't Perks leave back to
Canada? Oh, yes, Perks, when did Perks leave? Yes, Perks, I don't know just when he left 1st Division. See, I'd left 1st Division.
Well, that's right, I'm sorry. So you went to 5th Division again.
I don't know just when he left that. But the 5 Div days, then I was posted to North Africa along with a group of Canadian officers. I think there must have been about 30 officers and warrant officers from various units in England and some from Canada were sent to attach to the 1st British Army in North Africa for 3 months' experience.
Now, whereabouts would this be in North Africa?
Well, we landed in Algiers, and the fighting was in Tunisia. We joined the units in Tunisia.
So you saw action here? Is this
Yes. That was the purpose of it, was to give us some field experience and an operational field.
What date would this be?
1943, I think. Just about the first flight of Canadians, and there are several series of these these flights. I think we've got a date here. It's in my scrap. Hold it. May.
So you're back.
Must have been about Christmas, January 43.
January 43.
The first flight of Canadians went to North Africa. Wally Bean, Lieutenant Colonel, commanded the detachment, and Remy officers, we were still ordnance then, Russ Noble, a major, I was a major, and Stan Clark from Canada was a major. The three of us, and we had three warrant officers with us from our own.
What were your duties here then?
Well, we were supposed to be available reinforcements to take place of British casualties, but there weren't any British casualties in our field that we could wait for, and we didn't have that length of time. So after hanging around the reinforcement unit in Algiers for a couple of weeks, we worked our way up to the front and reported to the DDME there. He attached us to to brigade workshops. And I was interested in armor, so I went to the 6th Armored Division, reported to them, and was able to join in whatever they were doing and do the odd little job for them. But principally, we spent our time observing and getting the feel of the game.
What did you think of the North African campaign?
Well, it was a rough one.
Oh,
yeah, we were losing, having our backsides kicked pretty regularly. And Remy problems there were one of the light aid detachments being overloaded with work and attempting the repairs far beyond their capability. There seemed to be a need for more flexibility in their support and in their arrangements with the brigade workshops.
Mm.
In other words, the Canadian attitude, as I appreciated it, was of much more flexibility in helping the LADs and strengthening the LADs or getting them to bring stuff into the workshops in a very flexible way, so that they didn't become overloaded, particularly in an active mobile role where they mustn't get too much.
It'd be more like coordination, I guess, is what you're...
Yes, mutual support.
Coordinated effort.
And You see, if an LAD started to tear down a tank and the regiment had to move, they were in trouble.
They were in big trouble.
You mustn't do it. But you could get help from the workshops. And
If we can go back for a moment here. Now, these light aid detachments.
Yes.
Now, your general maintenance, now, your fellows, like, say, in a tank, if we use that tank as an example, driver, engineer, whatever in the tank, I don't know his exact title, he's doing general maintenance, is that correct?
The crew maintenance. They're supposed to do something, they've got a routine established that they do so much every day, almost every chance they got.
They do oiling, greasing, plugs, that type of thing?
That sort of thing. Very, very light repairs, but make sure that if anything was going wrong, it was reported. And the LADs had to check on this.
Theirs is the gap between having to take it to the shop.
LAD lived with the regiment.
Now, did they pack spare equipment,
They had spare parts and tools that the crews didn't have, tank crews didn't have.
And also expertise, I guess?
And the secret of success would be to have a very good warrant officer and some good mechanics in the LAD, perhaps even better than you had in the bigger workshops.
Mm-hmm.
They could spot troubles before they developed. And they could diagnose accurately without taking a thing all apart, what was wrong with it.
Yeah.
So we found out early in the game that you had to send very good men to the light aid detachments. And you could absorb a less skilled tradesman under supervision in the workshops.
In the workshops themselves.
In the bigger shops.
How does this relate? Now, your training is in engineering, I guess is what I'm getting at now.
Yeah.
Now, how does this relate to...
Well, I found there wasn't a hell of a lot of difference between being a Remy officer in the field and being a mine manager in the bush.
Same idea.
Well, yeah.
You
have to fight your equipment.
Of course.
And you have to look after yourselves and improvise a bit.
Now, you left Tunisia, or North Africa.
Yeah, we had about 3 months there.
You had about 3 months. You had come under fire. What did you think of the German troops?
Hmm?
What did you think of the Germans at this point?
Well, I didn't see very many of them. But they thought a lot more of our gunners than we. they were very good. The British gunners were extremely good. They used to scare the bejesus out of the Germans. In those clear mountain valleys of Tunisia, the CRA, I guess, was anyway of the division, would wait until he saw a German concentration of some kind, even an O group for a conference or something, and he'd bring down 72 guns. On them with great accuracy very quickly. And an uncle target and all 72 guns would open up, just bang that place, and just for two or three rounds and stop. And this is a demoralizing
quite
effect. They were awfully good that way. The British armor in North Africa was hopelessly and badly equipped. Just their old tanks, Crusaders and Valentines, were worn out and couldn't go very many miles without repairs, without breaking down.
So they had to fight their equipment as well as the Germans?
Well, they had an awful time, and they did very well with them. I was there when they were being replaced with Sherman tanks, which the Americans had brought in, and they were enough for the 6th Armored Division. They pulled the division out to re-equip it, and leaving their old tanks in a park, and issued them with new Shermans, which we all drove, and just getting onto them nicely. And the Americans had a disaster at Kasserine.
Oh, yes.
And had to recall the Sherman tanks to replenish their own forces, and the Brits had to go back to their old wrecks.
Oh, no.
And then stop the advance at Thala with the old wrecks that they had, and it was quite an operation, and they did it all right. They stopped the Jerry, sir. But the Valentines and Crusaders had six-pounders in them, you know, and very, and the tracks wouldn't last very, very long. 50-mile march would see quite a few of them out of action, broken down.
Sounds pretty good, I guess.
It was rough. It was very disappointing when they lost the Sherman tanks.
What was the, just the Americans took such a beating there, I guess?
Well, they had a bad reversal. And I remember General Eisenhower talking, visiting our mess later on in Holland. He saw two or three of us that had Africa Star ribbons up, and he said, "I'd like to see you boys in the corner." So he said, "Replenish your drinks," and he got us in the corner, and said, "I see you've been in North Africa, and I want to let you know that that trouble we had at Kasserine was my fault, nobody else's." He said, "I saw what was wrong, and I didn't move quickly enough to stop it."
Is that right?
He created a wonderful impression on us, just his frankness. Yeah, in coming out like that to a bunch of junior officers and saying, I should have spotted it sooner, it was my fault.
That's
and
okay.
This was in Holland.
As we were 45,
what else am I going to
45?
Tell you about that campaign? Oh yes, the rainy problems in North Africa were quite interesting. I mentioned the flexibility in repairs, the lack of it with LADs. Recovery. We talked about the need for a tank recovery vehicle, an armored recovery vehicle. We had nothing up to then except what I call soft vehicles for recovery work. And the first Tiger tank that the Germans lost was knocked out by a British gunner with a 6-pounder. And there it was in a mountain valley. And it was quite a prize because we hadn't seen one, or we hadn't been able to get one before. General Martell, I believe, was on his way from India to have a look at it when the word got out. And there was quite a gathering of tank experts to come and see this German tank. Well, in the meantime, it was in a bit of disputed area, and the Remy boys were laying on a recovery operation with a DH tractor. Go out and get it, bring it back to a safe place, and with the proper covering operation so they could do this. In the meantime, they only had two D8 tractors in the theater, and they lent one of them to the sappers to build a bridge, and the sappers decided they'd go and get the tank out without telling anybody, and on the way in, the D8 tractor was, or the Remy D8 tractor on loan to the sappers was strafed, so they lost that, and then the sappers decided they were going to lose the tank too, so they blew it up.
They
blew up the tank, and all the experts could see were a few bits of armor plate when they arrived.
Oh no!
And so,
what were the sappers doing there in the first
place? The DDME said he'd never lend the sappers another DA tractor. And anyway, he wanted armored recovery vehicles so he could go in and get these things.
Well, what were the sappers doing in there?
Well, they were building a bridge, and they borrowed the D8. And they had the only piece of equipment handy that could handle the job.
So
they thought they'd do it.
Oh, no.
Well, they didn't endear themselves very much to that operation.
Didn't that sound?
Oh, well, they were good stories.
Then you left and went back to England. This is in 43. Yeah. Now, were you then to prepare for?
I must tell you, while I was still in Africa, the signal came through that I'd been given an MBE. I didn't know what the hell an MBE was. Mm-hmm. And Frankie White was an Armored Corps Canadian officer, and he got one too. So we went around to Algiers, was sent back to Algiers, and got a couple of little ribbons, very nice, and stuck them up. And came back afterwards, tried to find out what it was all about, and when I got back, they said it's because of the work that had been done on the maintenance system tanks. Well, I just thought I did, which is very pleasant, but I thought I'd mention it because there are no gongs anywhere in the theater at that time. And a couple of Canadians showing up with ribbons on was a bit unusual.
Now, were you presented your award by the king?
I eventually ended up at Buckingham Palace for an investiture, and this was the first honors list we had in Canada, the Canadian officers. So there were a bunch of...
What was your impression?
Oh, I was thrilled. Very pleasant.
It
was a joint effort. There wasn't an individual at all. I had some help on this. But when we got those tanks in Phi Dev, there'd been damn little maintenance done on them, and there was no system of maintenance.
So you instituted the new system of maintenance?
Got busy and got a system of maintenance for tanks, and this is what it was all about.
Got them operational. Well, it's very pleasant, though, that to recognize for the work done.
There wasn't an individual effort.
Well,
but the need was there.
Well.
And,
I think that's very interesting.
I was lucky enough to get it.
Then you went to, and this is 43, but you received notice that you were awarded the gong.
Yeah, the award came through over in North Africa, and that was the interesting part.
So you went and you got the ribbons.
Yeah, we got some ribbons, sure.
I didn't have a clue what it was.
No.
And you're a major at this point.
The Brits thought it was very nice. And
you're saying, though, that it went pretty much on rank, that you got an MBE...
MBE was warrant officer to major.
And then from lieutenant colonel...
The lieutenant colonel got an OBE, colonel got an OBE.
OBE.
Brigadiers got commanders.
Commanders.
CBE. And below warrant officer, you got a BEM. British Empire Medal.
British Empire Medal, of course.
That was the scale.
They've changed the whole thing over now, I believe.
Well,
they actors
I
and everybody.
I don't suppose we get them anymore in the Canadian forces.
No, but I'm just thinking of the decoration itself. They give the OBE the Beatles one.
Well, there's a civilian division to the order.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
a military division and a civilian division.
The civilian
sure,
division.
Sure, the Beatles see. Get them and the football players.
Players get them and...
Well, that's all right.
I guess that would be worn very, very close to the first.
Yeah, that's
very,
the senior
very
one.
High rank,
the senior one that
senior
I
am.
Senior one. The rest are campaign ribbons.
Very good. Now you went back. Then you went back to England. How did you
well,
make your way
back?
Well,
then when I went to England, I didn't go back to Phi Dev. I went to Army headquarters.
How did you get back though? Ship?
Oh yeah, troop ship.
Through the Mediterranean?
Oh yeah, troop ship to the Med.
What do you think of the Mediterranean at that time?
Well, I didn't see much of it. The usual troop ship convoy. A bit noisy at times. I think they had one air raid on the convoy. I didn't see any damage. You're all down below anyway. You don't see
no
much
submarine.
Of it.
Mm-hmm.
Air. I think I was an air attack. But I didn't see it. I didn't hear of any problems. We were quite high spirits on the way back to England. All of us were there. I don't know if we had. There may have been one or two casualties amongst the lot. Most of the Canadian officers, particularly those of the teeth arms, were able to get into more action than I was as a technical officer.
Mm-hmm.
Wally Bean was the A&Q at the 78th Infantry Division, and Frankie White commanded an armored regiment, a Canadian major.
Mm.
The CO went back and had a bit of rest. And while he was doing that, they'd been ordered to take down their 0.5 Browning machine gun mounts from their tanks, and he didn't like the idea, so he kept his up, his regiments. Next day they were raided, and he knocked one out of the air with his own gun. So they quickly rescinded that instruction.
Short order. Well, who's making these decisions to disregard an issued piece, I guess, like getting rid of a machine gun.
I don't know why the hell they wanted them to take them down.
We're using this as an
example. I think they wanted them for some other purpose, probably. Somebody else needed them more.
So you think that was more probably the consideration, the decision, rather than the use of the piece itself?
Oh, no. I think they probably figured they'd be more effective in another role.
But you never knew who was making these decisions, though.
Now, while we were in North Africa, after I'd been with the 6th Armored for a month, it's my turn to move over to an infantry division and change places with the Major Noble,
mm-hmm.
who'd been spending his time with the infantry division. And, so I saw British Crimean said I thought he wouldn't want like to be bothered with another Canadian officer, and I didn't want to go to the infantry particularly. I was there to find out about armor. And if he'd lend me a truck, I'd look after Major Noble, and we'd go around the places I'd been shown, and I'd take him around, and we'd both stay with the armor. So he said he'd lend us a truck, all right, but he wanted to have a British driver on it. And so we got the truck and the British driver, and with our two warrant officers, we set off. And we got around the corner, and we got the British driver into the back seat. And Russ Noble drove the car, and I read the map. And we visited the NAFI and drew enough whiskey and beer to make ourselves welcome. And then when we went into a British mess, one of the workshops, they welcomed us more than they would have if we come empty-handed.
Certainly.
And we got into some interesting places that way. So we did that for a few weeks, and then I got to report back. But that was good fun. We saw more and got more out of the campaign than we'd been stuck in the back room of somebody's headquarters.
Now, was this field experience, did it prove to be helpful? Or did you just have to make do, everything is different?
I think it was very helpful and very worthwhile. And I'm sure that the other officers and other arms, other units are equally... And even more.
Well, I guess when you hit the beaches though in Normandy, could you draw on experience at all, or is just the fact that you've been operational and had the experience and were not as...
Well, how much of it were able to use afterwards?
Yeah.
We used a bit of it right away in the Canadian Army, as far as Remy's concerned. We introduced a little more flexibility.
That's the key in
the employment of units.
Excuse me, sir, for a second. Is that the key? You mentioned flexibility an awful lot.
Yeah, all right.
Is that the key? Key to the rec?
The key to it was to be able to concentrate your force, if you like, to use a military term. If a formation or a unit is badly beaten up, its equipment is in bad shape. After a show particularly, you want to be able to concentrate a lot more repair facilities than would be their normal allotment. And in the Canadian forces, we kept better control at Army of our units, so that whoever needed them most could have them.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in our third line, the employment of our third line workshops. This is a technical problem, perhaps. We did not assign them to corps as readily as did the British. We would keep them under command, and in a fast-moving advance, we would leave them employed, working on equipment in the big crop dumps we had. As the advance proceeded, we'd take the rearmost third line workshop and move it furthest forward, move it away, leapfrog it right along the whole LOC, right almost into a divisional area where there's a lot of equipment to be fixed. And they would stay there and they'd work on that. They'd work on that till all the others went by them. And in this way, a workshop that was on the move wasn't mm-hmm. getting anything done, but a workshop that was loaded and static in one place could get much more done than if they were picking up stakes and moving every few days. You'd leave them for a few weeks, and they get a hell of a lot more work out.
This sort of flexibility.
But that's what I'm talking about. If an LID needs some help from a workshop, we'd give it to them. We might call it an advanced workshop detachment, but this frustrated the staff at times. But
was it coming through the red tape? I guess in a lot of ways, eh?
Call
or
it that, but we were pretty adroit at not making this too apparent. But we had an advanced workshop detachment with sort of an undetermined number of people and men. Well, if the job required 50 men. You might put an LAD up there and get them working, and if it required 10, or an AWD up there and get them working, if it required 10, you might call it the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if they needed more, you'd give them more. We had this way of doing business.
It's great.
Well, that developed a little bit from the North African deal.
That experience where the
Brits in North Africa were concerned about always having their assigned number of workshops move with each formation when the formation moved, and we tried to get away from that and give them the support they needed for the task in hand.
So in this sense, then, that not only this, but for this reason alone, Your experience and your colleague's experience in North Africa paid off for the Canadian.
Well, I think it was influenced. This just became it probably came current to other people too at the same time. But anyway, that was one of the lessons we got.
It must be difficult to theoretically figure what you would need and how you would approach a job, and then the actual practicalities.
Totally
divorced.
Sure. Well, you've got yardsticks and experience tells you these things. Recovery, field recovery operations.
Mm-hmm.
We had one funny little story. One of the British LADs trying to recover a tank. There'd been a bit of a dust-up, and there were some German tanks and British tanks in the same little area. And the Brits sent out their LAD with their old Scammel recovery vehicle, which sounded like a tank. And they came down out of the morning fog and mist, and they found a whole bunch of Jerry's working on their tanks. They thought this was a tank attack, and they quickly surrendered. So this British LAD brought back their own tanks, the German tanks, and the German German recovery crew, freight of them all back in fine style. one of the good yarns.
Well, sir, I think if we got enough today,
enough. Fine.
Well, just tape will continue on side 2.